CJAM 99.1 FM programming is hosted almost exclusively by community volunteers. The views and opinions expressed on the following program are that of the host and their guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of CJAM FM. For more information and resources, visit our website at cjam.ca.
I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to Handy Link. I'm your host, Cam Wells.
In this segment of our show, Jeff Kramer will be giving us an update on the CS Foundation.
So what's the latest with the Foundation?
Well, it's interesting you called today because tomorrow is Chondrosarcoma Awareness Day. It's an international effort to gain awareness about chondrosarcoma. And this will be our fourth year hosting this event. We chose my daughter, Shana, her birthday. It would be her 33rd heavenly birthday. As I've mentioned in previous interviews, she passed away from a very aggressive subtype of chondrosarcoma. This conventional grade 3. And she was the inspiration behind our developing the foundation. Before she passed away, there was nothing out there. There was no support whatsoever to give folks a place to go, information, advocacy. It was virtually non-existent. So it's one of the reasons why. And my daughter had the insight and the fortitude to say these rare diseases needed as much attention as common cancers like breast and lung, pancreatic cancer, but they don't get, and it's because very few people get these rare diseases. So. We decided to when she was in her last stages of the progressive disease, I told her that I would take the mantle and carry on with her mission. And that's what we did. And we did that about 4 years ago.
So I'm curious, when it comes to breaking down the walls and getting chondrosarcoma to be a little bit more recognized, what steps have you and the foundation taken to make sure that it actually is in people's minds?
Well, we provide information. We've created some publications. They're listed on our website under helpful information. We send out this information to anybody who inquires about it. We'll send a link, through email. These are some publications that address what chondrosarcoma is, how to select a sarcoma treatment center, things that people need to know in terms of making their decisions. We have networked with a number of other sarcoma foundations to see where we can find common ground to work together and, be part of the effort to bring not only chondrosarcoma, but because chondrosarcoma is a subtype of about 750 sarcomas that are out there, but to also shed light on sarcomas. There's a lot that we have in common with sarcomas, so we have to learn to work together and speak with a unified voice. And we're in the process of doing that. And I'm hoping that one day soon we'll have a huge campaign effort to let people know how important it is to recognize that if they have a lump on their body the size of a golf ball, they need to address the ball and get it checked out, because that could save their lives, because early detection is absolutely necessary in identifying that you have a rare disease like a sarcoma. And one of the first signs is having a lump on your body. So you can't avoid that. You can't just write it off. You need to get it checked out.
So I'm curious, you mentioned chondrosarcoma. It's a subtype of any number of others. Is there ever a risk of misdiagnosis?
Huge risk. And that's partly because most oncologists aren't aware of this rare disease. Or if they are, they're not really totally familiar with it. To really get an accurate diagnosis, you need a pathologist that specializes in bone and soft tissue cancer to look at it and, to look at a biopsy and recognize it. And, I have even come across pathologists who misdiagnose it. They may have nailed the fact that they have chondrosarcoma, but we have 12 different subtypes, and they may not fully understand what the different subtypes of chondrosarcoma look like. So, it's a very complicated disease, and it takes a lot to really break it down and unpack it and, take a good look at it. And this is why, again, education is necessary, to create awareness and to bring just the knowledge of having it. We have a patient registry, and in our patient registry, our initial data indicates that 48% of our of members in our community, those who have been diagnosed with chondrosarcoma, were misdiagnosed initially. And in my daughter's case, she was misdiagnosed. She was a 26-year-old. She went to a orthopedic surgeon because she complained of pain in her back, and they thought she had scoliosis, of all things, and they gave her exercises. Well, 18 months later, we found out that it was chondrosarcoma, and she was properly diagnosed.
So, in terms of the Awareness Day, has there been any success you've experienced since the inception of the foundation in raising awareness?
We make incremental success, and it's heading in a positive direction. We've asked everybody that we know to sign a petition that supports clinical trials and research for chondrosarcoma. And up to date, we've had 3,000 people sign that petition. And all we ask is their name and email address. That gets them on a mailing list that we constantly provide updates and information to them about our foundation and about some of the activities that we got that we have going on. We've also asked people to wear yellow, something yellow, whether it be a yellow ribbon or we have these wristbands that are yellow. It could be a yellow shirt. It could be anything yellow. But we asked them tomorrow to wear something yellow take a picture of it, use the hashtag CSWeCare to post a picture so that we can collect a series of pictures around the world. And each year this gets a little bit bigger. We have now some companies, corporations that are doing some, you know, that are participating. We have just places from around the world, organizations from around the world that recognize, you know, our activity and are, you know, participating in one shape or another.
Right. Thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you could stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
This first interview was a post-dated one, so some of the events referred to may already have happened. In this segment of our show, Heather Gillespie will be sharing her experiences with SARI. So what can you tell me about your experience with SARI and in the disability community?
A few friends that also had special needs children that attended there, and they would tell me how great it was for their children. So I looked into it and spoke to my daughter Hayden, her doctor, and he also had heard great things and filled in all the forms for the to see if she would qualify for the assessment and everything. And yeah, it's pretty great out there. It's very welcoming. And when she first started, she was basically would lay for her riding session, like draped across the horse's back, essentially like on her tummy, because she wasn't strong enough to be held upright for long. And then it's been a couple years now, but now she does her whole lesson sitting up, facing forward with someone on each side helping to hold her up because she can't sit unassisted yet. But just the strength gains she has made have been great.
So I'm curious, if you're comfortable sharing, what is your daughter's diagnosis?
So it's a rare genetic disease. It's a mutation in her case of the CACNA1A gene. So there's no like name for it. It just is the gene name. So CACNA1A, so CACNA1A is the gene that's affected. It affects the calcium channels of the brain, essentially.
So when you got her diagnosis, how did you keep yourself strong and keep focused on, this is my child, I need to be a source of support and not giving in to any of the mental health strain that I'm sure comes with a child being diagnosed?
I guess it's just because you just have to keep going. It took a long time. I think she was 7 when she was diagnosed, around there, so it took a long time because it's rare. I don't know. You just have to keep going because it's your child and you have to do what's best for them and what they need. But yeah, it did take a long time for her to get a diagnosis, but it was, because I don't think anyone here had really dealt with it before. So it was kind of like maybe just researching her symptoms and going through, like, as best as I could, medical papers that I could find online and stuff. I don't understand a lot of the science-y medical terms the best. But just sort of finding things and pointing them out to her neurologist and geneticist and saying, hey, do we think this is it? Like, can we test for this? And then finally, we were able to kind of link a few things and we're able to get a diagnosis.
So what have been some of the best supports that have helped you on your journey?
Family, for sure. My parents live in the same neighborhood, so they're here and they help like as much as they can, which is great. My boyfriend's here, it's been great. And then Hayden actually loves him, like I think he's her favorite person. And then SARI has been awesome because it's something that Hayden can do and it's just for her. We can go out and we can be spectators and watch her on the horse. And she has her occupational therapist, Kirsten from SARI, that guides everyone. And then she has her team of awesome volunteers. So it's nice just to be able to watch her out there doing something. It's pretty cute.
So in her time with SARI, has there been any success moment that stands out for you? Something unexpected, maybe. Like you mentioned, she's gained some strength, for example.
Yeah, I think one of the best ones, I can't remember the exact day it would have been, but they decided to try her, like, sitting upright, facing forward, and they put, like, not reins, but a little, like, metal handlebars, so, like, with two handholds in front of her, and she was able to kind of hold on to that and kind of help keep herself upright, essentially. So that was pretty special.
So, do you have any advice for any of the parents out there who might be starting off on a similar journey, wondering what might be possible for their child?
Oh, like in general terms? For
yes.
Bursary?
In general.
General? Okay. I guess sometimes it's hard to stay connected as a parent of a child with special needs because there's so much going on. You lose connections of, I would say, like, friends and people you used to be close with. It's just there's too much happening to maintain all those contacts. But one of the things that you can do, even if you don't share, is there are Facebook groups and stuff like that of people with your child's diagnosis or just people with special needs children in general. And they can be a lot, even just reading some of their posts of what they do and their ideas and tips and things that they've tried for their children are very, very helpful.
So, to look at the other side, if you could send any message to the community about the need for equal inclusion of persons with special needs and disabilities, what would you say?
That's a tough one. I guess you don't really get it until you've had to deal with, like, the thinking ahead of planning, like, okay, what if I can't get this parking spot to get my daughter into somewhere, or if someone were to block the side where my ramp is. So you don't really think of those, like, accessibility, inclusivity things until you're in it. So it is hard if you haven't ever had anyone, I guess, with those issues at all. I don't know. I find I just have to plan ahead, and planning ahead for everything has been my kind of, I don't know, I don't think I answered your question right.
Actually, you absolutely did. And that being said, when you explain to someone about how you might need that prioritized parking space, for example, do you find the communities typically receptive when you say, my child has a disability, I'm trying to give her the best support I can? Find that people are open to understanding?
Oh, definitely. I think there is, Hayden and I, she was the SARI ambassador for 2023, so we had to go to several events and speak at them. And even the people that you would meet that would come up to say hi or say thank you for your speech or whatever at the end or to meet Hayden, some of them would come up and they'd be like, oh my gosh, like, we've been here for a while, but we never really thought about how there isn't anything else for, like, a child of certain abilities or disabilities to do. Like, we just sign our kids up for sports and activities without having to worry about it. And then, so even people that are aware, like, you don't really think about what is or isn't out there for kids that can't do everything, I guess.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this. But if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Attention music lovers. CGM is thrilled to announce the release of our brand new compilation, Live Off the Floor from the Vault. This limited edition cassette features recordings of musicians from our very own community and beyond, spanning from 2006 to 2023. You'll hear exclusive tracks from local acts like Middle Sister, Cellos, Psychic Void, to out-of-town gems like Shotgun Jimmy, By Divine Right, and Kixie. You'll receive a limited edition cassette tape, a download code, and a companion zine featuring photos and write-ups from the bands. CGM Live Off the Floor from the Vault. Order your copy today by going to cgm.ca and clicking the Donate Now button.
Welcome back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Jeff Kramer told us a little bit about his work with chondrosarcoma and
Heather Gillespie shared her experiences with Sari.
In this segment of our show, Sean Wiltshire will be giving us an update on his disabilities employment efforts. So, with the new year upon us, have you noticed any changes in trends for disabilities employment?
Well, what we are seeing, Cam, is an increased interest in what are the things that organizations are doing to make people more employable. And I think this is one of the areas that we need to continue to talk about, which is sell the skill, not the disability. So we've struggled over many years as what kind of a model do you build that shows the inclusivity of bringing people with different skill levels or different challenges into one workplace. What we're seeing is we need to move away from that and focus on the skills. The labor market tells us that employers are continuing to be challenged. One of the things that we're seeing is a continuation of how do I be an inclusive employer? What does that mean for the other people in my workforce? So it's giving people that level of understanding and support that I think that we haven't done before. It's kind of sometimes been a charity model. We've both seen that over the years, and we've both seen sort of this idea that we're doing a favor for somebody. So we have to switch the equation up, and I think that's starting to happen a little bit. Because people are asking. The skills are what's relevant. The disability is not. So it's that piece that we're saying to folks, we need more concentration on the high skills that folks have or the skills that they have available at the time and move from that point. So it's one of those questions of sort of what came first, the chicken or the egg. But what we want to say to people is the skills are the value that people hold, not what often is perceived to hold them back.
So I'm curious, do you ever find that the built environment of a potential employment situation might be a deterrent, such as if a person has the skills and not the capacity to physically enter the building, might that present something of a challenge?
It is, because it's as I've said many times, employers are so afraid of doing the wrong thing, they often struggle with what is the right thing. And if they only have peripheral or, you know, sort of that edge information, as we call it, of I need to be more inclusive, without the understanding of what does that mean, then that's always going to be a struggle, because they may say we're an inclusive employer, but we don't have an accessible space. Well, then you're not an inclusive employer. But it's the information that they're receiving on how they're supposed to do it. And hiring one person who has a challenge that might, you know, doesn't affect your job, doesn't make you that inclusive employer. What we're trying to say to folks is that sell the skill, not the disability. And it's the same when you are looking for a job for anyone. It's what is the skills match? Where are you in that skills match? And how can we make that the saleable item versus the fact that you may need an office that doesn't have a, you know, a window, or doesn't have other sound issues or lights, you know, for folks who are living with autism. So I try to explain to employers that, yes, it may be difficult at times to understand what any new process is. But at the end of the day, that person who just might have a disability was able to solve the problem in your business that you have not been able to deal with in 6 months because you haven't been able to find someone. So it's around that economics piece, right? People forget about somebody's disability, I think, when they figure out that that person's contribution will change the bottom line of the business. So if you had a highly technical piece of skill that you needed done that you have not been able to fill, but all of a sudden you have somebody who maybe has autism or uses a wheelchair or has a vision or mobility issue, you would then not include them because you don't know how to deal with the other issues. But what you do know is that they have the skill to solve your work issue. So that's where focusing on the skill helps, because we're not highlighting that somebody has a deficit, we're highlighting somebody who has a skill. And that's what we want to be doing, because that's what anybody would do. That's what a resume is for. That's what an interview is for, is to highlight what makes you stand out from anybody else. And that's what we're trying to push as we enter this new year. I mean, we see the Canadian Disability Benefit. There's some concern around that, whether or not that's going to be affected by provinces trying to claw back so that nobody actually gets out of poverty. So it's those ideas that we have to see that it's not only about the job and the person, it's all about those extra things as well. So we see not only the inclusionary practices that people struggle with, employers, but we also have the idea that folks with disabilities themselves have to sell the skill. And what makes them the best candidate? Maybe it's their experience. Maybe it's the innovative way they solve problems. Those are things that we're trying to give an opportunity to hear more of versus, please hire this person with a disability. They need a job. So that's what we want to stay away from.
So in that sense, do you have any advice for employers out there who might want to go beyond the minimum? You mentioned they often want to do the right thing as opposed to the wrong one, but doing the bare minimum should never be the end goal for any employer.
No, it shouldn't. And I think that it's that learning curve, right? It's that the first time you hire somebody with a disability and it's a new concept for you, you are unsure. The same is with anything that's new. But what we've discovered is that by giving the employer the opportunity to learn as they go through that process, that, you know, we don't, you know, certain words or processes that you know, they may feel are average, that we know may be not inclusionary. So we give them an opportunity to move through the process in real time. So we're there to support them and say, this is how it works. It's not just getting a job, it's the chance for advancement. It's not only getting the job, it's being included in the culture of work. So it's being there to give that information to the employer. And I think that the other thing that some of the organizations could do a better job at is promoting the successes they've had, promoting the idea that they've done this for other folks. I think that we're all very poor at promoting our stories of success. It's a case of, you know, you kind of have to boast a little. But we've gotten a little better at saying, well, we've done it for this business, we could help your business. And then it becomes not about the individual, but about the work that needs to be done. So it's trying to not remove disability from the equation, but put it at the back end. It's not relevant to the skills the person needs to do the job. They may need accommodation to get to the job, they may need accommodation on the job, but the technical skills, they probably would have them, because you skill people to jobs that they know they match to. So it's that idea that we're giving the employer a education without making the employer feel like they don't know what they're doing. Because the employer is the expert at their business. They're maybe not the expert at HR, or maybe they're not the expert at inclusion. But with organizations throughout the country, we could be that person for those individual employers. And that's the role we should be taking on in this time of year as we get ready to, you know, so it's a little tiny bit slower. Not that it's slow any time of the year, but in January, there's a little bit of a couple of weeks where it's a little bit less busy. And those are the things we should be looking at. What is it we're doing to present the information in a light that focuses on the skill?
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yep.
Simple truth is, my friends, that Jeff was exactly right in so much as some conditions aren't household names. They therefore don't get as much recognition. However, they require the same amount of support. One condition is no less valid than another, and those affected by them deserve society's support. Someone says, I'm being affected in this way. Keep an open mind, keep an open heart, do what you can. Even if that means just listening to their story. Someone going through a rare condition, disability, what have you. I maintain there's always something we can do just to show them a little support. Even if it's on the day of recognition for a given condition, wearing the colors associated with it. It's a small sign, but it says, I'm here for you. I respect the fact that you're going through this journey, and it is my hope that you come out the other side even stronger. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.